in the blurb for the day long, it says, for spiritual seekers have set out in the wilderness to few processions, to brave the elements and the unknown in search of higher wisdom. And the Thai forest monks still wander through remote areas of Thailand on Tudong. Tudong is the term that's used for just going out and practicing in situations. I think one of the I wrote a few notes for myself of, okay, what could I talk about? And started writing down the different qualities that can be cultivated in this practice. And what came to mind as I wrote them out, that most of them are actually paramis, the paramitas, sort of these wholesome qualities that support our spiritual aspiration, so that the practice of, say, the Tudong tradition is to give oneself the opportunity, putting oneself in a situation that these sort of wholesome qualities can be brought to the fore and cultivated and well established. And then, of course, as we're living our life, whether we're lay people living in the world or whether we're the monks living in a monastery and not going anywhere, well, you don't go anywhere. So you give people the opportunity to come down to Spirit Rock, and everybody wants to get in the van because you get a chance to go somewhere at least. whether we're going anywhere or not going anywhere, or whether in the world or in the monastery, the opportunity is to cultivate paramitas, these wholesome qualities, the qualities of patience, of effort, of investigation, of relinquishment, of loving kindness and compassion, and different aspects of living a human life in a way that allows us to really have both the qualities that give us a sense of kind of an anchor, as well as on a certain level challenging us as well, because we don't. There's a tendency as human beings to security, comfort. That's the we've been doing it since we got out of the trees. You know, another theme. Okay, Tudong, we'll go back to the trees a bit, for a monastic, actually we're not really, say, by our discipline, even going back from the time of the Buddha, to go wandering on one's own, you have to have trained for a long enough period of time, developed a relationship with your teacher, and get the nuts and bolts and basics of practice together, and have lived with a teacher as a monk for 5 years at least before going off on one's own. And sometimes you, as a junior monk, sometimes you can accompany a senior monk to go, or a more senior monk who can keep an eye on you, and then go on these opportunities for Tudong, for practice. In the West, it's still a very new phenomena, and in America, it's still very rare. We've tried it a couple times at Abhayagiri for short periods of time, just to go. But in England, the monks and nuns have been doing it for many years, where they, in the springtime, usually they'll take their bowls and their robes, and they go off, maybe one or two or three in a small group, and just go wandering in the countryside in England, Ireland. They've been really successful in Ireland. And there's no safety net, which is really... Of course, that's the idea. That's the whole point of the exercise, is to go out there with no safety net. One of the, as monks, we can't have money. we can't store food, and we can't even ask for food. We can make ourselves available for people's generosity so that we're not even allowed to go and ask. So that, you make yourself vulnerable, which is a great opportunity. And then just to, because to live on faith is such a, it's very precious to be able to live on faith. And the world is constantly sort of pushing us to, no, you need security, no, you need comfort, no, you need to be sure, you need to be absolutely sure. And and even for myself, coming to America and setting up a monastery in Mendocino County, sometimes it really drives me nuts. Institutionally, we're almost forced into this position of, you have to have health insurance, and then, so I don't, we don't want health insurance, we don't, and then we don't, we just let it, and say, well, you can't actually do that. And then because you leave the supporting organization of the monastery open to lawsuits, and then you want to live simply in a simple hut in the forest in Mendocino. No, you can't do that. You've got to go to the building, you've got to have a planning permission, and you've got to go to the building committee, and you, the county has to okay the plans. And it was, sort of living in a simple hut in the forest in Mendocino as a monk. It's expensive. it really drives me nuts sometimes. So finding ways to challenge that as well, so that this whole idea of tudong is, because I certainly want to keep that alive. I'd hate for that to as we establish a monastic presence in America, I'd hate for that to fall by the wayside. And to be able to at least have tudong, where you can walk out on the road with your robes and your bowl and just rely on what happens, just on faith. And of course, it's never as easy. It's very romantic ideal. I did it a few years ago, several years ago. Did that? Okay, yeah. I'm fed up with. I really want to go out. Be a tudong monk again. Because I'm getting old, and I get out on the get my bowl, my robes, and get out there, and first day, feet full of blisters, and by the third day, the blisters had been multiplying and they're bleeding, and sort of there was a monk and a novice with me, and they said, Ajahn, I don't think you should be going any further. And I said, yeah, actually, I don't think I can. uncertainty. How do you deal with the uncertainty? Because at that, the mind conceives of all the things that we want to do or should do or would like to do. And then sort of reality impinges. And then there's always that uncertainty. And how do we deal with the uncertainty? And that's the point of practice. It isn't that you live in a particular way or get things set up in a particular way that is beneficial or useful or even comfortable and secure. or that it's some other idea, but it's how do you deal with the uncertainty? Because that's how we practice Dhamma in our... So whether one's a monastic or a lay person, you know, how do we deal with the different uncertainties that keep manifesting? As much as we try to you know, make things certain, make things clear, you know, there's always some uncertainty manifesting. It's never quite the way we thought it was going to be. And to be able to take that on as a Dhamma reflection, and this investigation of how to bring the qualities of truth and Dhamma into these circumstances that we, you know, that life throws at us. So that is always going to manifest for all of us, say, as monastics or as lay people. I think one of the things with some of the, let's say, that monastics are, that especially around Tudong, and of course this is such a human characteristic in the sense of how we how we idealize and then look to something, you know, something else. Yeah, it was like a, what is it? I remember there's a bumper sticker somewhere that I saw or was told about. Me happy somewhere else some other time. And that's, you know, something like that. And you know, that's what we do. And I can remember one monk who this was when Ajahn Chah was still healthy and teaching. And this one particular monk was just really, really restless, really frustrated. He was still quite junior, and Ajahn Chah knew this monk's temperament very, very well, and used to tease him on occasion. And then they were in a group, us together, and he says, Runyapo, do you want to go in a bit of a tudong? And of course, the monk sort of just eyes brighten. Tudong, I'll be able to, but I'm still junior. He said, oh, I think it's okay, you'd be okay. And so he was just so excited. Yeah, oh yeah, boy, do I want to go. So Ajahn Chah sort of, well, yeah, you know, if you're going to go on tutoring, you're still pretty young, so, you know, I think what you need to set some guidelines for yourself and set up some determinations that you're going to follow. And he said, you know, so, you know, one is you should if you're going to go tutoring, don't accept any rides from anybody. Really walk, you know, because sometimes you're walking along the road and people will invite you to have a ride, take a lift, and that's what I said. And of course, at this point, this monk is willing to agree to anything, so it's just to be able to get out. And don't take any rides, because you really just, you want to be walking and really get that feel for being a Tudong monk. And said, and don't stay in any one place more than 3 days. So then I said, yeah. So then he left, and about a month or so later, the monk sort of shows up back in the monastery, and he said, oh, you know, how'd it go? He said, that Ajahn Chah tricked me again. He said, that was the most miserable experience of my life. because he suggested for him to go to on Tudong in hot season. And he's out there walking every day out in the sun. It's just hot and couldn't, you know, stay anywhere for very long. And he said he was just so happy to get back to the monastery. So that having to deal with the mind that conjures up all this the fantasies of, well, what's it going to be like? This is going to be the solution to all my problems. And, you know, we do it as monks, we do it as lay people. That's what we do as human beings. We're constantly projecting out. And but of course, one of the things with sort of Tudong and living simply is there, it really helps to, it shines a light on that really clearly, where you can't, it's a bit more difficult to fool oneself and to miss the reality of how we're being dragged around by our habits and our defilements. And it's just so important in practice to be able to see that, to see it clearly, and just seeing how our mind keeps fooling us, keeps tricking us. There's one of the monks that I know of was from Abhayagiri. He got fired up to, because he was getting close to his fifth rains and then be independent, be able to go on Tudong. He was going to do a Tudong following the Mississippi north. And that was a very interesting idea. And sort of start in New Orleans and walk north to, there's a branch monastery in the Ajahn Chah tradition in Canada, in Thunder Bay, near Thunder Bay, which is not that far from the headwaters of the Mississippi. So that was where that idea came from. Oh, okay, let's walk from there. And it was about, it was over a year before he even was going to go, and all of his gear was already packed. And he'd thought, he was thinking of everything that would be good for this Tudong. I remember at one point, silicon impregnated nylon. I mean, that was the thing that was going to make the Tudong really, really go. And he did. He went, and it was a great experience. Except it didn't go the way he thought it would. he went with a layman who went as an anagarika. And they got sick right off the bat, and both of them, and it was sort of like kind of like mononucleosis, where they were just really tired, and low sort of fevers, and couldn't shake it. So then they'd stop, and in the end they had they got almost up to Tennessee, which is, to me, that's a big deal. And I said, kept sort of encouraging me as he's going along, it's not about going from point A to point B, it's about how you deal with the situations as you as you encounter them, and even in the deep south of America, they were receiving alms food. People were taking interest and helping them out, and most people had certainly never seen a Buddhist monk down there, and they were being received. I remember that was an exchange that Ajahn Sumedho had with Ajahn Chah fairly early, before a lot of Westerners started showing up to live with Ajahn Chah. And because Ajahn Sumedho was on his own with Ajahn Chah and pretty much as the only Westerner for several years Jack Kornfield might have been one of the next Westerners who showed up. But Ajahn Sumedho was pretty much the only Westerner for several years. And Ajahn Chah asked Ajahn Sumedho one time, in these early years, do you think you'll ever go back to America as a monk and live in America as a monk? And Ajahn Sumedho sort of immediately reacted negatively and said, there's no way. No way I can go back to America as a monk. And he was, there's sort of a back history or a back story of whatever negativity. But then also they said, you'd never survive as a monk there. And people don't know what Buddhism is. They don't know what a Buddhist monk is. They wouldn't be able to, you'd just starve to death as a monk. And Ajahn Chah sort of looked at him in this really sort of concerned way. And Ajahn Sumedho sort of kind of felt, I'm ranting a bit. And then Ajahn Chah asked, you mean to say there's no kind people in America? Ajahn Sumedho said that was the point where he knew at some point in the future he's going to have to would be going back to the West, in a sense, because it's not dependent on people being card carrying Buddhists or whatever. It's just fundamental qualities of the human heart and kindness, and I think that's one of the things that as a wandering Tudong monk, you rely on the general kindness of people as well as the inherent human quality of spiritual aspiration that we all have this aspiration towards some kind of peace, some kind of understanding of the world, and a transcendence of it, or appreciation of that, searching. So that as a Tudong monk, one has the opportunity to both try to put oneself in that position of that spiritual search, but then also it isn't in isolation, because you're in contact with people on a daily basis, really, and as people want to contact you or make connection with you, and you're available, and certainly you have to rely on the generosity and kindness of people that take an interest and want to feed you, at least. And sometimes in Thailand, there's a variety of reasons that one would go on Tudong. I mean, one is just to do that kind of wandering, just to really wander and not not have a fixed abode, not have a fixed destination, and to just be wandering. Another is an actual pilgrimage to pilgrimage sites, and because in a Buddhist country, then there are these many, many places of pilgrimage that have been built and honored, and devotion has been given to all this time. And another aspect of Tudong is just going to practice in quiet places and giving oneself that opportunity outside of a structure of a monastery, and being in a quiet, simple environment, and having extended periods of meditation. So there's a whole variety of fundamental reasons that are can be behind that, and you know, some of the monks in Thailand are they do it for literally years. Like Ajahn Mun, who is the kind of the grandfather of the forest tradition in Thailand. It wasn't until he was in his probably his mid 70s before he stayed in the same. As monks, we have the 3-month rainy season that we're required to be in one place for 3 to 4 months at least, and that's a sort of a requirement accord by our discipline. And you have to have a dwelling with a door on it, a roof, and the walls. It wasn't until Ajahn Mun was in his mid-70s that he stayed in the same place for 2 consecutive years, because he would wander for the rest of that time, and then wherever he was, as it got close to the rainy season, it was starting to be too rainy, too wet to be wandering and living out, then he would stay in a monastery. And it's a testament to the special qualities and virtues that he had, because even though he was wandering, there's a very large group of students and disciples who gained faith in him and wanted to practice with him and followed and tried to find ways to keep that connection. So that I can imagine as he got older, there was this sort of moving groups of monks just following him around, trying to receive teachings and to be present with his example. There was a period when he was, had quite a large following, and he was quite well known. He was starting to be known and respected even amongst the sort of administrative circles in Bangkok. And then he went up to the north of Thailand, and was visiting a well-known monastery, and the powers that be heard that he was up there, and these head monks in Bangkok sent word that he'd been appointed abbot of this well-known monastery in Chiang Mai, the city of Chiang Mai. He packed his gear and was gone before the dawn the next day. I don't think he came back for about 12 or 13 years. And that was a period for him of intensifying his own practice. practice. I mean, he was accomplished meditator, accomplished teacher, accomplished practitioner. But as the numbers grew around him, then he felt that in order to really, I mean, he still had work to do. He didn't feel he was fully awakened, and so he stepped back from everything, and continued his wanderings on his own, and until his liberation, his freedom, his enlightenment. Then he went back to the northeast of Thailand to teach again. Monks still sort of tried to find him. There's the stories of some of his senior disciples sort of trying to track him down in these jungles in the north, and it's lovely stories and a kind of lovely image of just this monk striving for liberation so that he can come back and really be a presence. And his example, of course, has affected the whole of Thailand. One of his probably more junior, because he came toward the end of his life and became a devoted disciple toward the last 10 years of Ajahn Mun's teaching career. That monk just died at the beginning of this year, and on the day of his cremation, there was 1 million people for the funeral ceremony. And that's a direct result of just this one monk wandering off into the forest and living a life of Tudong and practicing for freedom. And Ajahn Chah didn't live with Ajahn Mun for very briefly, only a few days. But Ajahn Chah was very powerfully affected by Ajahn Mun's example and his teachings. Somebody who's really given up everything. I think it affects everybody. Just having that example in a society is something that's very powerful. I think for certainly America, we definitely need that. America has the most billionaires on the planet, mm-hmm. but I think it'll be a really accomplished country when we start getting really people who have spiritual attainments in this country. And that's something that, again, it's these examples that are helpful to encourage us all. In some monks that I know, actually, they might not even teach that much. They lived a lot of their life as just wandering monks. One of Ajahn Chah's teachers was like that. He was his name was Ajahn Ginnerly. And he was very quiet, didn't speak very much, but it was his example that Ajahn Chah was inspired by. And Ajahn Ginnerly, one of the things he did as a monk was he was wandering in Thailand, and then he wandered into Laos, and he wandered up into Burma, then he wandered into India, and went to all of the holy places, just walking as a pilgrim, and then came back. So it was probably close to 15 years, just sort of wandering to these, because it's That was in the probably 1920s, maybe the 30s. I mean, just there wasn't. You can't just fly into Bodh Gaya and do the do the circumambulations and get on the plane again. It was that investment of time and effort. And I think that's something that sense of for again for all of us, that sense of being willing to invest the time and energy in our spiritual practice, the kind of the culture and the times are more set up for instant gratification and the quickest efficient sort of way of doing things and just to be able to give oneself the time and to be willing to put effort into something and it applies to both the world, one's worldly tasks and duties or responsibilities, as well as one's spiritual practice, being willing to give oneself, because that's the I think the backdrop or the kind of the chatter in the mind that always goes on in the just with the pace of a modern society is there's not enough time. I don't have enough time. I've got to do this. I've got to that. That needs to be. And just this, hey, wait a minute. What is that? Where does that come from? So that and just to be able to challenge that, say, yeah, there's time if I just give my time to it. There's the opportunity that I can be put my attention and effort on it. I just can do it. So those are it's really liberating to be able to recollect that, because yeah, the whole pressure of the society keeps pushing us and it's easy to slip into. It's easy to believe it because the mind keeps saying it. We keep saying it over and over. So that sense of, oh yeah, there's another perspective, another way of dealing with it. There's a monk that I know that he left his home village when he was a novice because he's very bright, very intelligent, but he came from real backwater. And so he went to do his studies in the province where I spent most of my monastic life, in Thailand, in Ubon. And that was a center of learning for the whole of the northeast of Thailand in those days. And after he finished his studies there, then he was in his early 20s, and he's sort of asking the senior monks, you know, what should I do now? And they said, well, you can do a couple different things. I mean, you can go down to Bangkok and there's sort of institutes of higher learning there, and you can do more study and what would be the result of that or the benefit of that? Well, you could get, you know, you can get higher degrees and you can get that's a way of being in the sort of getting noticed by the administrative monks and getting a position of authority and responsibility in administration of the Sangha. And he said, well, and then sort of, yeah, well, what's the other alternative? Well, you could just go off and go wandering as a Tudong monk and go to visit different meditation masters and go and visit these other great teachers and say, well, what would be the benefit of that? And he said, well, you could become liberated. And he said, well, I think I'll do that. which isn't always what in a society where Buddhism is ubiquitous and people enter the robes for many different reasons. It could be attractive to be become an abbot for some perverse reason. So he went off wandering, and similar to one of Ajahn Chah's teachers, he wandered on foot. But he didn't, all through Laos, Burma, into India, wandered in India for years, wandered up into Nepal, went up to Tibet, wandered into China as a wandering monk. He didn't actually get back to his home village. So he left in this, when he was a novice, and in sort of his teens, and he didn't actually get back to his home village. He was 63 when he got back, and then to visit. So he hadn't seen his family since then. He just wandered. He'd been wandering. He's actually 115 now. He's still alive. He's a wonderful, wonderful monk, and tremendous loving kindness. Just to come into his presence is really moving. I took my mother to pay respects to him. He lives in the south of Thailand, and my mom's not a gushy faith type at all. and she went up to receive like a blessing cord from him, and put it on, and then she came back. She had tears running down her face, and I don't know what it was. It was just so touching to be close to him. He has this special sort of quality. And it's years and years of living in an environment where he's practicing and that kind of dedication to purity, living a life of real pure living, simplicity and purity. There's a very striking circumstance that came up, and in the forest tradition, the Tudong tradition, there's this sense of, you go into unknown circumstances, and even circumstances of danger and difficulty, and your main protection, your only protection, is your virtue. It's a really interesting perspective, in that the more commitment to virtue, to goodness, to living a life of having refuge, that's what protects you. And that's a very common perspective. And so that oftentimes when monks do experience difficulty, then they'll come back and make that determination in their mind. It's recollecting the virtue and the goodness that they've been committed to. And one evening, he was wandering in the forest, and overnight he was in a cave, and sleeping in this cave, and in the middle of the night he woke up with this very strange sensation around his thighs, and a huge python had started to, it was up to about his mid-thighs, had started to swallow him and to eat him. So then he sort of woke up and assessed the situation. Said, right. what he did was, it's very typical of this ethos of Tudong, is that he made this resolution in his mind and spoke to the snake, to the python, said, I've made a resolution to be fully enlightened in this lifetime. And if by your swallowing me, you can guarantee that resolution, then you can go ahead and swallow me. So, but if you can't, then you would be obstructing somebody who has made a pure aspiration. And it would be, it'd be better to let me go. And then he just made his mind very peaceful and established that mindfulness. And then after a couple minutes, the snake sort of released and started backing off. And then went off out the cave. So, yeah, these things happen. Because sometimes you read stuff like this and you say, well, this is just a made-up story somewhere. But, you know, this is somebody who I met and who he talks about some of the events in his life. And these things happen. They're wonderful examples. And I've actually asked, there's a woman who I know who's, she is a very dedicated practitioner. She would go up to Ubon to practice, but her parents lived in the same town that this monk lives in. So she moved back to look after her parents, and she started going to visit that monk, and she started interviewing him, and I was sort of really encouraging her to interview him. Well, because this is one of a generation that is sort of, it's reaching the end of that kind of era of these forest monks who could wander and practice for long periods of time. Again, the society is changing. Thailand is not it's just, in some ways, it's just as fast-paced as America. I remember one monk complaining, in the old days, Tudong monks would show up at the monastery and the first thing they'd ask is where's the alms food route? Where are the toilets? You know, what time are the meetings? And he said, nowadays, the first thing that the Tudong monks ask is there a cell phone signal? Because they're on Tudong with their cell phones. And you wouldn't want to not be connected. So, times are changing. These are, and I remember Ajahn Chah sort of saying, there's a play on words that he used. Because the word Tudong it's actually from a Thai word from the Pali, but then he sort of makes a play on words because Dong in Thai also means forest. And he says, instead of Tudong, it's taludong, and talut means to go through, and it's sort of, so people are, the monks are sort of, rather than tudong, they're sort of taludong, they're going through the forest, they're not staying anymore, it's going. And also the over, say, beginning from about 30 years ago, vast majority of the forests are actually destroyed. They're just not there. Probably in the late 1950s, early 60s, there would have been over 70% of the land would have been covered in tropical jungle. And now it's maybe 10 or 12%. So it's just the population, both logging, but then also the just cash crops, just economic. The economic development of the country was based on agriculture, and so it's sort of a direct result of the desire for economic well-being, and it's just sort of a result. So there's fewer forests to actually go wandering in and to live in. But these are they're still in Thailand. There's still a tradition of these monastics who want to practice in that way and to take the ethos of that. And actually, Ajahn Chah, of course, he himself did many years of wandering as a monk, and the amount of, say, population increase, decrease of forests, then the forest monasteries began to be more stable or more permanent places of practice, and. And he used to encourage the monks in the sense of, well, there's not so many places to wander, but the reality is here you are, we've got a monastery, you've got the opportunity to practice, and tudong isn't about walking or wandering, it's about cultivation of wholesome qualities, it's about the cultivation of doing those things that are difficult to do, living simply. Being patient, putting forth effort. That's what's difficult to do. Because actually the word in Pali, the word tudong, is from dutanga, and it literally means that which is difficult to do. And it was allowances that the Buddha gave, because there's aspects of the discipline that are required, rules of training that are required. And then the Buddha gave 13 kind of allowances that if one wanted to, they were called dutanga, they were difficult practices in the sense of eating only in one's alms bowl, eating just one meal a day. So the Buddha didn't mandate it, but it was something that somebody could do if they wanted to. Then it was a taking on of an austere practice, or of just having three robes, or just living under the root of a tree, just except for that rainy season period. You just live under the root of a tree, live in the forest, living out in the open somewhere without any dwelling place. Not lying down to sleep, just three postures, walking, sitting, standing. If you're when you you rest or sleep, you do that sitting up. That's difficult to do. So those are so that sort of that let's say the ethos of of the of taking on that which fosters simplicity and commitment. And those are things that are, I think, valuable for all of us. And that however we however we take it on, however we do it, because wherever there's a rub, there's where we can start investigating. You know, where's my comfort zone? Where's my habit? What's my habit? How do the habits of my mind pop up and how are they thrown into relief? And so that by just taking on, just slight adjustments of one's daily life, one's schedule, or things that one commits to, these are ways of training the mind and experimenting how to investigate those tendencies, so that we can really see them more clearly. Because it's the when we believe our habits and conditioning, that's when we get really stuck. But that opportunity to, just throw it into relief. You don't have to make yourself miserable. But, just going against the grain a bit. Ajahn Chah was a master at making us go against the grain, even when we didn't want to. And just sort of simple things. So especially for as a monk, where things are, they're already pretty simple. Food, shelter, our clothing, taking those basics, and then making a bit of an adjustment and saying, how can I simplify? How can I make this into a practice?